All right, welcome back to the Early Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Wednesday at 10 o'clock. That means it's none other than Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. How you doing, Dr. Craig?
I'm good. I flew in from Atlanta last night, so went off without a hitch, which is unusual for airplanes to these days.
Warm weather?
It got warmer. It was cold. We flew in Thursday, and it was the tornado day down south, so that was bad. We got diverted to Birmingham, but eventually got in. But no, it got warmer starting Sunday. But it was like Wisconsin weather for a couple days there, which shocks all the Georgians.
Yeah. you know, Dr. Craig, what is this shocking? The House GOP refused to budge as key debt ceiling deadline looms. It's only been a week since the Republicans have had control, a couple of weeks, over the House. Dr. Craig, this is going to be as worse than any of us even imagined. Those of us who knew what this was going to be, it's going to be even worse than that.
Oh, it's bad, because unlike Speaker Boehner or Speaker Ryan, where they, you know, were tormented by the Freedom Caucus or what the Tea Party became, but still governed at some level, you know, Kevin McCarthy, to become speaker, had to make deals with these folks. And these folks aren't interested in governing. They're interested in blowing things up, apparently the world economy. And it's a ridiculous proposition. This really is like if you're in a household, usually the household metaphors for economics are wrong and are misguided. In this case, it's not. And you'd already run up bills, right? Paid for food, paid for clothing, other things, right? And then you decided not to approve paying the credit card bills. I mean, it's absurd. The time to stop spending, if we're going to have that debate, is before the money is expended,
right?
not when we pay our bills. It's ridiculous that Congress even has to raise the debt limit. And I think we've talked about this on the show. It's from World War One. In order to appease pacifists like Wisconsin's old Fighting Bob La Follette, the Wilson administration agreed to have this debt limit vote. It was seen as a safeguard against overspending in World War One. Actually, it wasn't, and it was understood not to. It was kind of a face-saving measure. And then, this is profiles of political cowardice, no Congress had the guts to remove it because they were afraid of being attacked for spending, even though it has nothing to do with spending. What it has to do with is actually the government paying its bills. And if you don't do that, the dollar, one of the reasons we're a strong economy, it's the world currency. You do that, you actually disrupt dramatically the U.S. and the entire world economy. It's the kind of stuff that creates great depressions, Earl. But they think this is a way to get what they want, unpopular things like slashing cuts to Medicare and Medicaid, what we knew Ron Johnson also supports.
But Dr. Craig, in the end, they have to realize that this is something that will stick to them. Is it that they can't see that far ahead and they're playing the short game, or they somehow think they can attach this to Democrats?
Some of it is they're not thinking that far ahead. Remember, Newt Gingrich thought that closing down the government would be to their political benefit. You'd think they would have learned their lesson. But I think there are some of them that think that anything that goes wrong, like if they were to disrupt the economy, would be blamed on Biden. And we've seen presidents get blamed for the economy, whether it's their fault or not, right? And get credit for the economy unduly as well. And he's up for re-election in 2 years. And so they see this as a way to you know, and they're not, this is not the first time they would have caused a problem and then tried to get political benefit out of causing of a problem they caused. But they're also just divided. The Republican Party is divided hopelessly to some degree between their funders, the people who fund their campaigns, really the old Republican corporate elite, and the radical money people, the Koch brother billionaire types, who are playing on, and also this is their media infrastructure, their right-wing radio, cable, which is fomenting this public backlash that they use to their advantage, a right-wing backlash on cultural issues. And that backlash is just wants, is anti-government, has no faith in it, just wants to take a meat cleaver to it. Of course, they don't once you break it down into their effect. They still, as in the famous Tea Party, hand sign that someone had, keep the government's hands off my Medicare. There's a fundamental misunderstanding here about the world.
You know, Dr. Craig, even though, and knowing how vindictive these people are on both sides of this, fight, I don't see them finding common ground. These are vindictive people. And so to me, Dr. Craig, they're not looking at anything other than, as Frank Sinatra said, I did it my way. They only see one way. And now that they're divided, I can't see them sitting down and working things out and compromising because they're so caught up in, I have to be in control.
Well, most of them, I think that's the case. But, you know, the media persists in saying that there are still moderates in the Republican Party and rational, sensible people. It only requires eight of them to switch the vote.
Yeah.
If there aren't eight Republicans that will vote against their own party in order and their own speaker in order to save the America and the world economy and to serve their own constituents, then the whole party will be part of this. And I think that this really calls into question the fact that this is even a question, the whole media notion, because they want to say there are two sides, right? The mainstream media does, that there is some rational, sensible part of the Republican Party, because this oughtn't to be a question given the margins here. You don't need very many Republican votes to prevent this.
You know, Dr. Craig, we've been here before, and many times where, you know, what happens if they fail to pay the bills? We know it. We hear it happens constantly over and over and over. When can we finally put this to bed? How come we can't seem to both Democrats and Republicans get past this debt ceiling?
You know, Democrats get by it, but they don't want to take a vote to eliminate the absurd procedure of doing it. Really, the government should simply, when Congress is voting for any kind of spending, so secure or automatic spending, it should automatically approve the debt required, right? It's sort of like, I use my credit card, but I didn't yet approve the use of my credit card, and I might disapprove it, right? No, you're basically approving the use of your credit card when you hand it over to the cashier, stick it into the machine. We got to start asking the question about specific individuals when we know what the Matt Gaetzes and the Marjorie Taylor Greens and all those folks are, right?
Right.
Come right back to Wisconsin here. Brian Stile, first congressional district, comes into, you know, southern part of Milwaukee County and then down to the corner of the state. So he's supposed to be a sensible, rational person, a disciple of Paul Ryan. Where's he on this? Where is he? Just was named a committee chairmanship, so we know that he is preferred by the speaker. How about Scott Fitzgerald? I know he's been running as in the more right lane since he left the state legislature. a former Senate Majority Leader in the state legislature. He represents an area of the state that is becoming much more purple, Waukesha County, areas like Brookfield that are becoming much more purple than they ever were. Where is he on this? And we need to start asking this sort of question. Glenn Grossman claims not to be like the Marjorie Taylor Greens. Well, really? Is he actually going to vote this way? I think we need to start at Derek Van Orden, the new congressman, first termer from the second congressional district, is claiming to be a moderate because he's in a very swing district. Well, let's see it. Or no, let's not. So we need to start. The pressure needs to start going on individual members of Congress who claim to be actual lawmakers and actually sensible, responsible people.
So, Dr. Craig, do you think that the American people really understand what's at stake here? You know, it's one thing to talk about defaulting on the debt, but do you think they really understand what that means?
Well, it'd be kind of hard watching some of the media to understand it in the defense of the public, right?
Right.
I think they know that there's some sort of big threat out there, and they know that both sides are accusing the other. I think that the Democrats need to figure out how to explain this as well as the government shutdown was explained, right? Where obviously Bill Clinton, and I have a lot of disagreements with Bill Clinton, but no one can doubt that he was an effective communicator. He effectively showed what the implications of Newt Gingrich's radical and reckless course was, and the Democrats need to be able to do the same thing. I think that the media is certainly calling out the alarm sirens, right? And there's already whether they understand the mechanics of it or not, and not that the mechanics will be explained to them in general media, we certainly know that McCarthy's approval ratings are plummeting, which would suggest something here as far as public knowledge of what he is and who he is leading.
So, Dr. Craig, hold a thought. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, I want you to, with all your eloquence, explain the difference between what happened with Joe Biden and Donald Trump as it relates to gotta go to break. Be right back. You text us at that same number. Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, is on the line. And Dr. Craig, the documents. So I've had people say that I have not been, and Democrats have not been fair, and we've been hypocrites because Joe Biden did the exact same thing. As a matter of fact, what Joe Biden did was worse because he wasn't the president and he didn't have the right to move these documents. You say what to that, my friend?
You know, I just had lunch yesterday with a professor of argumentation and rhetoric and the longtime debate coach at University of Georgia. And Georgia has one of the top 10 programs in the country, very good at college debate. And he was telling me he was going to write an op-ed maybe for the New York Times or the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that argued that all the arguments the right makes are false equivalencies. And I encourage him to do it. I'd happy to look at it. I'd say, because this is someone who is an expert and a deep scholar in argumentation. And I think that's right. So there's a false equivalence here, in other words, because it involves documents, right? Because it involves documents that had a security clearance and been classified, that therefore it's exactly the same thing. And that they're very different in some ways. But I also think, Earl, that we need to not be hypocrites like they are, right? We need to not be in the position that any scandal that comes up about the other side we think is horrible and terrible and believe, and anything that comes about our side, we don't believe, right, which is what they do, and then when we pour cold water on it. So I do get concerned that all of a sudden there are Democrats and progressives who said, how dare anyone question the FBI? Well, Earl, we got to be willing to question the FBI. Look at the history. Look at the suppression of civil rights. Look at wiretapping of Martin Luther King Jr., who we just had the day in his honor. So we should, just because Trump is targeted FBI and targeted for violence doesn't mean we now want to hold up the FBI as necessarily a paragon. We need to judge them based on their performance, right, for good or for ill. So I don't want to just dismiss out of hand the document questions from Joe Biden, President Biden. And we don't know everything yet. We've had a problem, this White House, and I think they've been hamstrung a bit by the fact that they're cooperating, and therefore they feel like there are limits to what they can tell the public when. But we've had a drip drab of additional information, whereas crisis communication, Earl, you're supposed to get the whole thing out at once and not have further story developments where there are new revelations, right? So it hasn't been handled well, but for whatever reason. So at this stage, it's a matter of what we know. From what we know, Donald Trump deliberately took a much larger number of documents, and he held them for a long time, despite attempts to get them back, including subpoenas, and forced them to come and search his own residence for them, because they decide there was probable cause, there was a national security risk, and the government needed to do that. The Republicans then turn around and say, why didn't they go and do a search, you know, a forcible search of Biden's residences? Well, they didn't because they wouldn't have Trump if Trump had handed over the document, right? In fact, the Biden folks are the ones who alerted the National Archives and the Department of Justice that the documents had been discovered. It's not something that happened with Trump, as far as we know. So there are fewer documents. And there is no obstruction of justice. And we are much more certain that they've either handed them all over or they've handed over all the documents they know about, assuming there aren't any anywhere else they don't know about that they're still looking for, because they are still searching everywhere any documents could be. Having said that, all of that, though, we need to know more about, you know, what documents were under Biden's possession or in personal locations and how they got there and whether he intended to carry classified documents out of the White House, or whether it happened inadvertently, whether it was done by staff because they were mixed in, right, when they were sloppy in the transition. Those are totally different things, because a lot of the criminal laws require intent. They don't, having some classified documents inadvertently by staff mixed, now I'm not saying that's the case, it could be the case with President Biden, mixed with personal documents and ending up in boxes in your garage or in your residence, that is not a crime, especially if you turn them over as soon as they're located and noticed. There looks like, from what we know, serious evidence of obstruction of justice and direct crimes by Donald Trump, and a lot more documents involved. So that's the difference. The problem is, what's the problem, Earl, as we always have the problem? It's too complicated, and the simple argument wins in current American polarized politics.
Well, you know, Dr. Craig, we've got some folk on the line who want to chat with you on that. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on the line. Dr. Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action NU, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Wednesday. That means Wednesdays with Dr. Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. Let's go to CJ. CJ, quickly, you have a question or comment for Dr. Craig.
Yes, thanks for taking my call, Earl and Dr. Craig. But Dr. Craig, you conveniently omitted that these documents, for one, he was VP 6 years prior, and that the mere fact that the Biden administration buried this information for 6 days before the midterms, claimed to be the most transparent administration in history, and people were coming in and out of four different locations, probably Hunter, and, you know, we're finding out the truth that you said that was not true, the Hunter Biden laptop situation, and proven that the social media buried it through the direction of the FBI and the CIA. So when are you going to do some real research, Dr. Craig, and come true with some real facts? And the, like, you know, finally, the press is asking the administration of this St. Pierre, who really can't answer any questions or won't, or is lied to by
Boss. Hold on.
So I could go on and on.
We don't need you to go on and on. Let's let Dr. Craig respond. Dr. Craig.
Yeah. Look, when you state as fact, CJ, that they were stored in locations where people were in and out, and that Hunter Biden, who you guys have decided to vilify, was there, that's not on the record anywhere that I know of. I mean, you can find that stuff out at InfoWars or on Newsmax, right, or from Steve Bannon's podcast. That's not actual information. It's disinformation, which a lot of those folks admit they're doing at their more candid moments. So, I mean, we need to be very careful here. You're holding a transparency. The one argument CJ makes that you could try to sustain that you're hearing from mainstream media is that since they found out, apparently, a few days before the election, they should have immediately made it public. I mean, that's a very high standard to hold anyone to, especially when they just found something and their first duty is to turn it over to the National Archives, Department of Justice, and alert them. And to do it right before an election is prejudicial. Why? How would that help anyone decide whether to vote for Ron Johnson or Manella Barnes or Tony Evers or Tim Michaels? But just like when James Comey had that ill-advised press conference right before the 2016 election, that kind of revelation could have distorted an election outcome. And so I think the media, which just wants to know everything right away, is over the top on that. But I think honest people could disagree on that question. We could have a real discussion where you could have a back and forth on that. I just don't even know how to respond to some of the other stuff because then we merge into a whole bunch of conspiracy theory stuff that is fact-free. I mean, I guess it would probably take too long, but I still do not understand what the Hunter Biden claim is here. It just seems like attacking the troubled son of the president in order to torment him and damage the president with no strong evidence connecting anything Hunter Biden may or may not have done to his father.
Let's go to Jacob. Hey, Jacob, thank you again. Question or comment?
Hey, Earl. Yeah, I'd just like to bring up the issue of what happened in the state of New Mexico recently. You know, I know some of these people who live in right-wing media bubbles want to talk about Hunter Biden, but nobody outside your bubble cares about Hunter Biden, dude. But what they do care about are MAGA moron domestic terrorists like Solomon Pina, the failed state house Republican candidate there in New Mexico, who, because he lost his election and couldn't handle it, just cause, like the big crybaby conservative cult leader Donald Trump. So he sent out people to do drive-by shootings on elected Democratic officials' houses where their children are. So that's what you get from the Republican Party these days, terrorism.
Jacob, thank you very much for the call. You know, Dr. Craig, I know about the story and that happened in New Mexico. Many of us know about the story. you know, to link one whack job to everybody is, you know, whether a Democrat or Republican is not something that I think benefits any of us. And yet a guy was nuts and he was a Republican, but that could have been a Democrat as far as that goes. But what we need to do, Dr. Craig, is look at things, and I understand why the Republicans are angry because this popped up, and to say that what Joe Biden did with those documents is equivalent to what Donald Trump did is just not the case. It's just not true that these are basically the same kinds of situations. They're not. And clearly, Joe Biden should pay a political price, as he will, for what happened there. But to say, for heaven's sakes, Dr. Craig, that now you can't charge Donald Trump is just ridiculous.
Like, two incidents involve a car and therefore the same. One involves, you know, recklessly endangering people's lives, like driving through a crowded intersection of pedestrians. Another involved an actual accident, right, where someone slipped off a slippery highway. They both involve a car. They're not the same thing, right?
Yes.
They don't, and they can't be charged the same way. So because they both involve classified documents, now they're the same, and there's a moral equivalency. Fascinating, though, what Biden did is horrible, and they were defending Trump and saying it was nothing before. This shows the hypocrisy and that it was just a record-keeping problem. But now it's not just a record-keeping problem, is it? Now that involves President Biden. Now apparently, you know, Hunter Biden is sneaking in and getting whatever these documents are. We don't even know what they were, and doing something with them. I don't know with what. Basically, well, I guess I don't listen enough to Steve Bannon or to InfoWars.
Well, you know, Dr. Craig, to now hear Republicans clamoring and saying, let's get the investigations going right away like they did on Trump. You know, it's childishness is what it is. Yeah, there's going to be investigations on what happened with the documents with Biden as well as they should. But to say we've got to get it going right now, right away, I mean, yeah, come on. Aren't there things more important going on, Doc?
We know what these investigations are. They're like the old investigations into the communist witch hunts from the late 40s and the 50s. They're McCarthyism. They're for political benefit, and they have consequence. They destroy people's lives, like the Hollywood blacklist, infamously, really destroyed the careers of a lot of very extremely talented directors, producers, screenwriters who had done nothing other than have, you know, very left and progressive political views, which is actually protected in our country under the First Amendment. Your caller mentioned the New Mexico situation. Yeah, we do not want to say that therefore everyone is a terrorist who is part of the Republican Party, but we do need to say that misinformation and vilification of people just for political benefit has real consequences. Big lies in the 1930s had real consequences, and there are disturbed people who will believe it and will take action on it, and it's the heedlessness of it. I mean, the Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes famously limited the First Amendment by saying you can't cry fire in a crowded theater. And that was a time when there weren't modern sprinkler systems and fires, you know, would you know, just come out of nowhere, or people thought they were, and people get trapped and burned to death. So it would cause a stampede and kill people, right, if you did that. So we have the same thing here. We have a completely unethical form of public discourse just for building political power and for profit. And they don't care what the consequences are. It's knowable that disturbed people like this man in New Mexico are going to take action eventually if you're doing this, but you find it profitable, it builds your political power, you do it anyway. It's not terrorism itself, but it's deeply immoral and ethical and should not be acceptable in a modern democracy or any kind of civil society.
You know, Dr. Craig, we're down this rabbit hole. And we have been for some time now. And I don't know how this can be turned around. I honestly don't. We know that the Republicans have been chomping at the bit to get back control of Congress, but they haven't been wanting to get back control of Congress to fix the things that we know need to be fixed. They wanted to have control to get back, right? Like some childish thing. We got to get even.
It's very hard, Earl. You're right, to put the genie back in the bottle, right? And very hard. We need to start to have a dividing line that starts to divide whoever is reasonable left in the GOP, who is not willing to do anything for the power of their party or their side, and those who do not care about consequences. And maybe the debt limit vote is an example of that. We already had the 11 members of Congress who dared to vote for impeachment and actually name what Donald Trump did when he attempted to foment the first insurrection in American history, aside from the Civil War, which was, you know, a little more public and transparent. They were all ridden out of office, including Lynn Cheney. Well, are there any willing to cross the line now and prevent a bankrupting of the country and a potential economic calamity, not just for the people of the United States, for the people of the world, or not? People need to start crossing this line. They weren't willing to because they were currently in the House of Representatives, a little maybe better in the Senate, it looks like it, but maybe that's just a posture. But in the House of Representatives, they all were willing to line up behind Speaker McCarthy when he made deals with the devil, is what he did, and he's set up a really dangerous next 2 years.
You know, Dr. Craig, that's the part of this that McCarthy, the Speaker, says, I have to go after these things because I made a promise to people. That can't be the way you lead. I mean, where can you go when you've already got this albatross connected to you that I made a promise to these people who elected me that no matter how crazy it sounds, I've got to follow that? How can you lead?
It's how he became Speaker. This was a man who knew what Donald Trump did. He was recorded talking about it. And then he was willing to go on bended knee to Mar-a-Lago and make peace with Donald Trump. And Donald Trump supported him throughout the whole process of becoming Speaker because the man just wants to be Speaker. He just wants power. You know, we need to get back to a point in society where we do not exalt people who are that power hungry, who have no ethics, who would do anything to get it and will risk anything to hold it. He wanted to be on that list of portraits, there's rows of portraits of former speakers of the House, all white men, and unless the Democrats get a majority, then we'd have the first black man, right? We would have Hakeem Jeffries. But he wanted that more than anything else, willing to sell his own constituents and the whole country down the river to get his hands on it.
Hey, Dr. Craig, we've got to go to a break. Hang on. Our phone line's open, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Of a writer or a musician, each new installation bore the imprint of our unquenchable thirst to say something of our own, in our own way, in our own voice, as best we could. The trends of the times be damned. Thank God we've still got musicians and thinkers whose obsession with excellence and whose hunger for greatness remind us that we should all be unsatisfied with mimicking the popular rather than mining the fertile veins of creativity that God placed.
Two,
that
you wanna,
Two,
that you wanna,
Two,
you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. Oh, It's Wednesday. That means Wednesdays with Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. Dr. Craig, the Supreme Court vote election this spring and the amount of money that is going to be poured into it kind of tells you that there clearly this may be the most expensive of all the Supreme Court races in the history of this state. Your thoughts?
Well, the big business lobby and the right deregulated our elections for this reason. This is where Citizens United Supreme Court decision leads, and the state Supreme Court decision that deregulated a lot of state elections in order to keep Scott Walker out of jail when he violated our previous laws during the recall election. And it's going to get worse every cycle. Whenever you don't think there could possibly be more money, there's more money. And it isn't average people's money, right? That tells you that
right.
Big, powerful interests, billionaires, self-interested corporations, they're trying to name the tune here. And this was never what was intended for a state Supreme Court. These are supposed to be judges. These are supposed to be elections where there were quiet elections, where people heard from different possible judges, lawyers, to see who would make a better Supreme Court judge just based on who they believed, who they trusted, who they thought would be fair and impartial. And that's not what they are anymore. It started in the 90s. Wisconsin was one of the first states where the state business lobby had a conspiracy to create a court that would always rule in its favor. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce in this state, WMC, and that was part of a national strategy. And it's gotten worse. And so it's scary, but it is what we have to win elections this way in order to get back to a much more democratic format. But right now, this state Supreme Court isn't a real court. It's a super legislature. It is a flagrant violation of the intent of the U.S. Constitution to have people with 10-year terms essentially distorting the law, making new law just to achieve right-wing doctrine and dogma they believe in. And always simply you've seen the law as something they can twist into a pretzel to make the ruling they plan the rule to make.
You know, Dr. Craig, what I love about you is even in the darkest hour and even against all odds, you always say, we have to win the elections. Even with all the cards stacked against us, there's no other way out. You always say, we have to win.
And we had our candidate forum with the two candidates that we invited, Janet Persiewicz and Everett Mitchell. And last week, January 11th, it's still up there on Facebook Live.
Oh, that must have been a really good. Must have been a really good debate.
And actually, I was impressed with both candidates, and I think we have two very strong candidates. Our board meets Friday, where we're going to take up the question of endorsement. I don't know if we'll be able to choose between one of the candidates or not, but I thought both candidates did extremely well, and that either one would be an excellent judge. They both have different merits, so I'm not saying that they're tied. I'm saying they're both impressive in different ways.
Yes, they are. Let's go to Wisco Paul. Hey, good morning, Wisco Paul. You say what?
Good guess there. I guess we're not in the afternoon yet. Being from the Madison area, the vote only turns out here, and would you please explain to me why the vote was down just south of 30,000 votes in 22 as opposed to 20? In the Supreme Court election, like it or not, it's partisan now, and it's a very, very important election. But as Democrats, we need Milwaukee County. Thanks for taking my call, Earl.
All right, thank you, Wisco Paul. Doc, I guess he wants to know why there were so many less people who turned out to vote in Milwaukee. And part of every time people ask me that question, I always say to them, are you aware that there's an attack on the voting rights of people? You know, it's not like people just don't come out. They do everything within their power to prevent people from voting.
Yeah, you have to put in the photo ID impacts Milwaukee far more than Madison because there's a lot higher level of poverty in this city and people who do not have the official ID, right? Don't have enough money for drivers to drive and therefore wouldn't have driver's licenses, right? And there are a whole lot of other voter suppression, including new ones added by the Supreme Court this cycle, as far as disqualifying ballots with a witness to an absentee ballot, didn't write the zip code down. It's a kind of technical violation the Jim Crow South used to use and of course, apply in a discriminatory way. The elimination of drop boxes, a very safe form of voting by the state Supreme Court. But then in addition, we have to be very careful with this. The vote was way down. The vote was only down in Milwaukee County compared to the modern record for a midterm election, and that was the one immediately after Donald Trump was first elected in 2016, the 2018. It was very historically high in Milwaukee compared to other midterm elections. So if we're going to compare it to the high watermark, that's not entirely fair. I do think, though, that we need to, that despite all the voter suppression, we need to improve turnout. Oh, the other thing is Milwaukee voting performance for Democrats increased. So, in other words, Milwaukee produced a lot of extra votes for Democrats, even if overall turnout was down from 2018. But I think we can look at other things, Earl. I was talking to the chief of staff for the mayor of Madison. The mayor of Madison's a progressive mayor, Satya Conway Rhodes, and her chief of staff, who's a friend of mine from way back, was telling me that they had 39 early voting sites in Madison. And that's within the city's control. The lawsuit that we were lead plaintiff in winning maintained early voting for 3 weeks, but it's up to the city. They want to limit it. The Republicans, the Walker legislature, tried to limit it to one place per jurisdiction, and that was overturned in the court case we were involved in federal courts. But, Earl, we didn't have 39 in Milwaukee, and Milwaukee's a lot larger. So I do think we have to look at city government and say, why aren't we doing as many early voting sites per capita as the city of Madison is?
So
I think I'd add that to the other argument.
So, Dr. Craig, unfortunately, we've got to leave it there for now. Thank you, as always. We will be back together a week from now. Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Earl.
All right. We got to go. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Connor. I'll be back on tomorrow. Been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.